I'm Kathy Svitina, and this is The Efficiency Code, your guide to unlocking peak performance in finance and procurement. Listen as we decode the strategies of top industry leaders who are redefining efficiency and optimization. From spend management to lean operations, discover how to achieve more with less. Join us as we crack the code to sustainable growth. My guest today is Adam Smith. Adam is a seasoned procurement leader with over 15 years of experience helping organizations like Microsoft, Zillow, and NetEase build high-performing procurement functions. He has a deep understanding of modern procurement's role in streamlining operations, driving cost savings, and delivering value across departments. Currently, he's serving as a senior director of procurement at NetEase, and he focuses on transforming procurement into a strategic business driver by emphasizing simplicity, compliance, and value. Welcome to the show, Adam.
Awesome, Kathy. Thank you so much for having me.
Thanks so much for being here. I'm really looking forward to this conversation because you work with some of the biggest names in the industry like Microsoft, and you've seen a lot how the procurement has evolved into from this traditional purchasing role into a strategic leader, this modern procurement. And, you know, before we dive into all of this, I got to ask, what does sustainable growth mean to you?
Yeah, sustainable growth. And really, this comes back down to how I think about engagement. And growth, especially in the procurement sphere, or as we think about it in the modern procurement transformation, is really around business engagement and partnering to understand where the business is going. So really being embedded, understanding that growth path for the organization, where procurement truly is that key piece that hinges and connects business to finance to legal, et cetera. That sustainable growth model really hinges in not operating in a silo, but really that deep partnership with the organization and across the organization.
I really like that, especially being so connected with the organization. And, you know, one of the things that I have seen in the procurement, it really also depends on where it sits on the org charts. I have seen it sit as a part of legal, as a part of finance, as a part of the shared services. And I'm sure you have seen your way of where procurement sits in the org chart. What have you seen? And also importantly, how has the way how the procurement sits in the org chart, how has that impacted your ability to be the strategic driver for the business?
Yeah, so it is all of those. And it depends on the organization where this little shell of procurement does sit. Ultimately, I do believe we're a core finance function. But procurement is an art, not a science. Whereas if you think about accounting, that truly is a science, right? You're matching zeros and ones, whereas procurement, it's more of a it's really an art of how you think about negotiations and the canvas of the overall deal and how different systems fit together and how different solutions are architected to make sure that we're finding the right suppliers at the right time. It is a unique piece where it does fit across that entire ecosystem, though, where it is core finance, but it's not accounting. It is a little bit of FP&A, but it's not FP&A. It is legal and contracting, but it's not a legal function, right? So we think about commercials, it's a partnership throughout. Ultimately, it is that shared service capability, but I do believe that rolling up through that finance lens drives not just a procurement delivery model, but an overall finance transformation where you can drive accruals for accounting, where you have much better visibility in your spend for your overall SOX compliance, right? As you transition to from either, depending on where you are in your life cycle, from an invoice only model to a PO model, where you can actually drive really core finance transformation, better visibility, better forecasting, and ultimately better delivery that lands back in the business. For finance professionals, that's absolutely where we want to get to. And for the business, it's actually where they want to get to as well, right? They want to be able to operate with more. And so from a cost saving standpoint, it's not that procurement is a blocker, but we're actually enabling you to do more as we drive savings across your entire ecosystem of spend.
And as someone who sits in the finance organization, I would like to ask, how can finance as a function be a better partner to procurement?
Great question. Each organization is a little bit different, but ultimately to me, it does come back down to the business, right? And understanding what their priorities are and being that really tight-knit partner as we think about annual operating plans or AOP budgeting cycles, because that's ultimately where we're going to get the best value into our overall sourcing strategies, vendor selection, et cetera. The biggest thing where I've seen our opportunities is early, right? We want to be able to engage early at the beginning of those planning cycles. And oftentimes, again, in kind of that life cycle of procurement, as they move from a very immature model to a mature model, you want to get to a place where you're driving demand gen. You actually understand what's coming before you get a transaction. And for most procurement folks in the room who have been a part of this, is the business comes to you last minute and says, hey, I've already negotiated the terms. We just need to get a contract through, right? Procurement adds very little value there, almost nil, right? Because ultimately the deal is almost already done in a lot of cases. Really, we want to start partnering with finance at the very beginning of the budgeting cycle throughout, whether it be that year, that quarter, depending on the cadence of that organization, and really look at a bottoms-up approach of, are we going to do this internally? We're going to hire headcount. Cool. Probably not a procurement function, right? We need to bring that person in. Are we going to do this with an internal shared service, like an internal consulting partner, or internally developed with IT? Great, not procurement. Oh, we're going to do this externally. Great. Let's start thinking about what that actually entails. What is the scope of this? And then, do we have providers and suppliers that are already preferred to be able to deliver? Or is it something where we actually we don't have this capability? We need to go to market and actually look at different providers in that sphere. And then ultimately that translates back to finance of, A, we get cost savings out of it. More importantly, we have that cadence and visibility throughout that, I guess the modern term would be that procurement orchestration of, we actually have that visibility into what we're buying, who we're buying from, when we're buying it, to actually create the transactions within operations of RPO, which then can then get invoiced off of, and obviously the contract associated to it.
Yeah, that's a really good tip. And especially, I appreciate from someone who's sitting in the finance seat to get an insider scoop of how can we be better partners through procurement and how can we bring you into that conversation. And I got to ask, what is the one thing that you think finance people get wrong about procurement?
There's probably two things. One is almost core to like who we are, right? So in a very traditional sense, there's this concept of procurement and purchasing, right? Those mm-hmm. are two very different things. Purchasing is extremely transactional and in a fairly legacy model in a very direct perspective of how we think about it's just transaction. In a modern procurement view, it's really enabling that business. I come back to that term of enabling procurement and ultimately enabling the businesses to identify what is their strategies. Okay, how does then procurement focus in on those? So that's one. And I think two, again, it's really art versus science, where if you think about most of finance, it's very, I'll call it like ones and zeros of how do we make sure an invoice match, or how do we make sure that our budgeting is there? Where in procurement view, it's really much more of, again, the canvas of an art of, okay, how do we fit the right puzzle pieces together to deliver a solution through providers or vendors, suppliers, to meet those business goals. And that's the kind of two very different ways of looking at that capability of what procurement is and how does it fit into that finance ecosystem.
Yeah, that's really good. You know, a lot of this also comes into all of the procurement processes around it too. And the question is here is like, how do you optimize these procurement processes that you're still reducing cost, obviously, but you're improving the operations without sacrificing the quality side? Do you have any ideas or tips that you can give our listeners to, like, how do we actually get there? Because that would be the holy grail, right?
Yeah. Oh, 100%. Yeah. If you think of that really in a traditional sense, it'd be like procure to pay, but really it's a source to pay, right? Throughout that life cycle of a deal, from the initial I need all the way through execution, and not just execution, because then stop there, because then you have renewals. You have to make sure vendors are delivering. What are those SLAs? How are you managing your vendors in a very traditional sense of vendor management? I would say, if we think about that ecosystem of tools, every company is unique in what they have, whether they have a third-party provider, a platform like a Coupa or a Zip or other, or internal tools, it's still that orchestration that needs to happen from And it needs to start with, again, that budgeting of, from the business, I need. And it shouldn't matter what it is, but you need to have that one intake, that one experience where you're saying, I need. And I don't care if it's a consultant or if it's a computer. It's the same experience, because ultimately for us, it's a providing that transparency, visibility of, it's one place to go, and procurement's here to support you throughout that life cycle of a deal. Integrating with a CLM solution, integrating with the actual PO that's being created and that invoice, so there is transparency throughout. But I would say to direct directly answer that question of where, like, what does that need to look like? It's got to be simple, right? It's got to be that one front door for an end user, and it has to be transparent. And I think that's a big area of opportunity for procurement across the board, of building that trust with customers is driven out of transparency. And so how are you able to show throughout that life cycle, from sourcing exercise to purchase requisition to purchase order to delivery to invoice, where is it in process? So you're able to bring all of those, I'd say, questions, but ultimately all of those actions into one view for the end user and ultimately the business stakeholders.
And having that one place that you can go to that becomes a universal source of truth is not just important from a procurement piece, obviously that's an important, but also from the finance, from the legal standpoint as well, because now you're not going into 10 different places to get this information. It's all in one place.
100%. And maybe a little bit beyond that, if you think about, or as an end user, right, when they think about procurement, well, procurement just actually has kind of a slice in a lot of that end-to-end orchestration. There's legal and there's finance and there are approvals, right? There's third-party risk management throughout that life cycle of I need. And each of those teams and or steps has a different role and function throughout that. And so for an end user, they need to understand, where is it within that view of, I started with a purchase requisition. Well, is it with third-party risk? Is it with legal? Is it with finance? Is it with an approver? Is it in contracting? Where is it in contracting? Is it with the supplier? Or are we waiting to sign it? And so providing that full visibility to that end user ultimately builds that trust, because you're turning on the lights to where that experience is for them as they try to buy. Because at the end of the day, and I always come back to this, at the end of the day, the business doesn't care if it is procurement or if it's finance or if it's legal, right? They just need. And so how do we help facilitate that experience in a simple, compliant, and value-add way?
That makes sense, because if you have to buy software, whatever you're buying, a widget you're buying that the business needs, it doesn't... The business wants it. They don't really care how they get it. They just need to get it.
100%.
Have you ever been in the implementation side of this one procurement tool? And something that I always like to ask for people who are at the beginning of their procurement journey, that they, you know, you've worked with Microsoft, you work with at Zillow, at Circle, and these are pretty big companies and they already have an established procurement function. But if you're just starting out and your procurement function isn't as mature, like, what are some of the takeaways that the person who is starting to build this procurement function can take and say, how do we build this from scratch? Like, do you have any tips on that? What are some of the pitfalls that people can fall into?
I'll approach it two ways. One, specifically with, you have to understand the business. Like, I always say that procurement is the business. And so to be able to get that out of your cube, out of your office, go and meet with your stakeholders. Understand what the true pain points are. What are we actually trying to solve throughout this life cycle? Is it risk mitigation, right? Is it we need to get spent on PO, we don't have visibility? Is it we have to optimize to automate the AP matching process? All of those have different solutions to them, and ultimately becomes a procure to pay solution or a source to pay solution. But you need to understand what we're actually trying to solve for from the business stakeholders. So what is the customer pain point? What is their challenge? Is it that they can't find the right suppliers? Is that they don't know where to start? All of those are a little bit different. And then to flip that internally is really bring a coalition of the willing together around legal and third-party risk and finance and accounts payable and accounting, of understanding their pain points. So I do think, rather than jump into it just from a very narrow lens of we're trying to solve a procurement problem, we're actually not. We're actually trying to solve a business problem. And how we do that is going to be dependent on what our business needs. What are those gaps that we have? Are we direct or are we indirect? And then moving back upstream into what are the core capabilities that we need to be able to build to meet those needs or those gaps that we have today as an organization.
Have you seen something that has worked particularly well in terms of working with the business partner in other departments? Obviously meeting them, but how about if we go deeper into that? You know, sometimes people just meet them like once a year and that's not enough.
It's a relationship. Like I would always say, like, as a procurement procurement should understand that business. What are they doing? How are they doing it? Being able to sit with them and understand and walk through their workflow and their day to day to be able to help identify what are those gaps. And it comes in. I always think about procurement and sales are two sides of the same coin, right? So oftentimes, not only are we working with our account execs, et cetera, on negotiating a deal, but we're actually looking at how do we sell procurement internally to our customers, right? And so that conversation with the business who, an engineering leader who's trying to figure out, okay, how do we optimize costs for cloud, right? That conversation is really different on what we're trying to solve for versus when we talk about accounting of, okay, how do we think about accrual automation for our cloud spend? Or that marketer is going to be very different than talking to that engineering leader of what are they trying to do. And so I do think it's a really key area is understanding and identifying who your stakeholder is and almost putting your sales hat on and helping drive and tease out really what are their core gaps. What do they need to solve for in their business? Is it they need the, budgets are tight and we need to be able to drive cost reduction? Like, okay, that's a very traditional procurement view versus actually we need growth. Okay, well, how do we think about making sure we have the right models in place from a cloud strategy standpoint to be able to have capacity, to have the right ROIs, et cetera?
Yeah, and you alluded to this idea of traditional procurement versus the modern procurement. Let's talk a little bit about that, because I think the way what you have been describing right now is this idea of a modern procurement. Like, you are sitting in the business, you have this conversation, but with the traditional procurement, it's a completely different model. Let's talk a little bit about that.
Yeah, so I think about it very, in a traditional procurement model, you do have a very central procurement organization, and almost goes back to that concept of, purchasing where you're transacting. Yeah. And in that case, it's valuable. It's also, it has its limits on value and capacity as well, right? Whereas in a much more modern environment, you have a seamless experience for your tool set, but more importantly, you actually understand what the business is doing and where they're going and how can you help rather than say, hey, here's our preferred vendor list. You pick one of these three, that's fine, right? That doesn't really work in a modern experience, whereas you actually have to understand what is that business trying to do. And especially over the last, I'd say, 5 to 7 years, that accelerated growth. And we've seen it even in the last, year and a half with AI, et cetera, of like, actually the growth is super fast. So we can't rest on the laurels of what we historically have done as an organization. We actually have to go out and be proactive with driving that engagement, understanding where the business is going. It's almost like the analogy of ice hockey, right? You don't skate to where the puck is, you have to skate to where it's going to be. And that's exactly the same with a procurement organization. You have to understand where the business is going to actually meet them at their growth pattern.
And you mentioned AI, and this is such an interesting developing field for, it's going to affect us all. I mean, finance, procurement, legal, everything. How do you think, if you were to try to put a prediction out there, how AI is going to impact procurement, what would your take be?
Yeah, no, let me pull out my crystal ball real quick. I think it is, with everything AI, it won't replace, it will optimize, right? And so for those organizations that truly capture that capability, they're going to be exponentially more efficient in what they're doing. And for those that don't, we would continue to lag behind and operate in a consistent model. So if you think about automation, the contract review, like, it's a very simple item that the players in the space are looking at already is, how do you optimize for contract review? That's one. Just a core, if you think about reporting, and we haven't even touched on that yet, but from a reporting and spend standpoint, what you can do with AI now in just being able to pull data and actually develop insights, you're able to significantly save both time, but ultimately that time becomes more optimized into analysis versus pulling reports. It's almost where, data analysis and some of the ML and dashboarding was 5 years ago. Well, you actually don't have to do that anymore, right? It does it for you. And now you can spend your time actually looking for those insights to identify whether it be cost savings opportunities, vendor consolidation. That's where you're going to be able to actually capture that value of AI in the procurement sphere in the near term. What the future looks like, again, I'd have to dust off that crystal ball to be able to get there. But if you think about, again, that an entire life cycle of procurement from PR to be able to automate that PO based on the request or requisition, to be able to automate and pull from statements of work into to create POs, matching for invoices to PO, like all of that becomes much more automated. And then you can free up time for your resources within the organization to actually focus on insights and value add activities rather than reporting, for instance, or manually keying information.
Exactly. I mean, I see that too on the finance side as well. And it's actually, as scary as it is, it's exciting because that frees up your time to really focus on those value driven activities versus pulling out reports and, you know, keying stuff in as manually as you have mentioned. So it frees up all of your time to do stuff that really drives the business forward. And eventually, I mean, you want functions that drive the business forward versus just, you know, pulling out reports that nobody ever sees.
100%. And I think it's all, you know, it's similar to if you looked 100 years ago with if you think about like the car and the horse analogy, like, you just want to say you want a faster horse. So like, well, you can't just continue to add resources. You have to be able to get some automation, and the capabilities that are being developed now drive that automation to allow your team to be able to focus on that business engagement, on that stakeholder management, on understanding where the puck is going in the analogy before, rather than what historically has been done.
Yeah. Yeah, exactly. And we have touched upon the reporting and the spend for the reporting. What are you currently seeing in terms of the tools that you're using that are giving you that capability to have that real drill down into the spend? Are there any particular tools that you're using that are valuable to you?
Rather than like speak to specific suppliers or tools or capabilities, I really think that to focus on, you know, we talk a lot about the spend orchestration or the savings or et cetera, but really we want to start at the end. Like, what does that reporting need to be able to tell us at the end of the day, whether it be, again, very traditionally, like we want to look at our savings. Okay. How do we measure savings? Is it hard dollar savings? Is it soft dollar savings? Is it cost avoidance? Like, those are all inputs that need to be entered at some point in time to be able to get back that core savings number. So that's one aspect of it. Two, again, if we look at going back to where we want to get to from an organizational standpoint of understanding annual operating plans and budgeting, we have to have some sense of where we are today. And really that comes through from a budgeting standpoint at a very, very high level of, you know, what is our spend portfolio look like or profile look like today? And then you really can start drilling down on, you know, is it, what's our spend on PO? And there's all of the different attributes that as a procurement professional, you want to be able to look at. What are our OKRs? Like, do we want to drive spend to PO? Are we okay with, you know, a certain percentage of spend being off PO and going direct? What's our spend under management? You know, that's a huge, huge lever for us of, you know, what are we touching? What are we influencing? What are we driving? And how much of that spend are we either directing or redirecting in some cases to a alternative supplier where we have contracted rates and rate card, et cetera.
As you were talking in terms of savings and the cost avoidance and the spend under management, that made me think of the KPIs. Are there any specific KPIs that you guys are tracking right now in terms of procurement? Because I think that would be interesting to see from our listener standpoint, especially if they're building that procurement function, what would the KPIs be for them?
It all depends on where you are in that life cycle of you as a procurement organization, right? I think specifically when starting to kind of, if you're thinking about beginning an organization, I don't talk about savings at all. Savings is an output. Savings is an output of engagement, right? And so if we think about where we want to be able to get when you're initially starting, it's baseline activities. So what is spend on PO? It might be zero, right? You might be starting off and you have zero spend on purchase order. In those scenarios, it's like, okay, well, let's start with spend on PO is a core metric. And then be spend under management. How much are we touching, right? It might be invoice only, but we have a contract that we negotiated. we want to be able to manage that. And that's a core area of ours. And then as you go up the stack, those KPIs continue to evolve into, at a certain point, it is core savings, right? That's ultimately what, whether it be head of procurement or if you pour it into finance, it's absolutely something that's going to be asked of at some point. But when you're first starting, and if you are at a startup, SMB activity, savings is an output of engagement. And savings will come, but that shouldn't be the focus. And it goes back to that stakeholder engagement, stakeholder management. If you walk into the door to a marketing exec and specifically start talking about savings, that is not their core priority. Their core priority is, how do we drive marketing qualified leads? In a marketing sense, that comes from spend. Okay, well, how do we optimize that spend? Right? How do we think about what is the right growth drivers and the right suppliers that will help that leader achieve their OKRs or their KPIs? The output of that ultimately is very self-serving for us. We get to drive that spend under management, ultimately get it contracted, drive those conversations and negotiate those deals. But that's not the conversation with the stakeholder. The conversation is, what is your challenges? So understanding what those stakeholders' OKRs are, KPIs are, really translates back to what your KPIs are and what you should be able to focus on.
And that could be a lot of different things, especially when you're working with different, like what marketing cares about is very different what legal or finance would care about.
100%. And if you think about that, again, very traditional source to pay or procure to pay lifecycle, some of those KPIs are cycle time, right? If we work with the business, but it takes 2 months to get a deal through, they're probably not going to be come knocking on procurement's door next time to help them because they missed their deadline or their milestone. And if we have a procure to pay experience, we want to be able to measure those cycle times throughout that experience. Again, whether it be with finance, with legal, with procurement, et cetera, we want to be able to measure those, each one of those, to make sure that we have the right SLAs in place. And again, going back to your question of like, how do we think about SLAs or KPIs? If you're starting out, you might not have any. And that's perfectly acceptable, right? You want to be able to understand, rather than set an artificial SLA that can't be hit, start with none. And over the course of rolling out your programs and capabilities, start measuring that. And then you can really fine tune that and identify where those pain points are, because you'll find them and your stakeholders will absolutely identify where they are for you.
And that, I'm assuming for the SLAs, that would be also different for every particular vendor, for every contract that you're working with. And that's where you're going back to your business partner asking, what are your pain points with this particular vendor, correct?
Absolutely, 100%. And so what are those, both what are those internal SLAs from the procure pay lifecycle, but also those SLAs when you negotiate that deal, understanding what are those core delivery models or capabilities that vendor is delivering, and how do we make sure that when we're contracting and we do have SLAs in place with a vendor, they're actually being achieved. And that goes back to that vendor management portion of it.
And let's go into the SaaS spend, which is becoming one of the biggest spends in the organizations, because everything these days is apparently SaaS. What have you found that works particularly well when it comes to KPIs for SaaS? Obviously, this would be vendor dependent, but is there anything particularly that you have found to be helpful when it comes to SLAs?
Yeah, I think even in the SLA space, I think it starts with understanding what that business need is, right? So if we go back to the beginning, like, what are we trying to solve? And again, if we think about the SLAs as we negotiate a deal, understanding what are the actual SLAs that we need to, right? And so oftentimes there'll be an initial SLA that is challenging. Are those the areas we want to push on though, right? So we think about the negotiations and specifically SaaS, what are those key attributes as part of either the legal terms or commercial terms that we want to put, that we really think we have leverage and we want to push on? And that's not we as in procurement, that's us, that's procurement and the business coming together of like, what are those core priorities for us? Is it, 99.99% uptime, or is this a tool that we're buying that, we want to push on cost, not SLAs? And where can we have that flexibility and understanding that, again, that art of the negotiation of where can we balance those out? What levers can we pull, dials can we turn to figure out what's going to be the right value back to the business from an SLA standpoint?
The thing with SaaS is as well that their tools are being used across the multiple departments, and sometimes there's the visibility piece that's lacking. What is your approach when you are trying to maintain this visibility to get the overall total software spend?
Yeah, and I think it goes back to reporting, and so making sure that we have a very clear view into overall spend, not just procurement spend, but overall spend that we have, right, to give the full ecosystem, for lack of a better term, of what we're looking at. And so with that, being able to understand, identify, it's not just one organization that's using SaaS tool X, there's four different ones, and having, again, alignment with the business of tool X works well for marketing, but not for IT or whatever that example is. And understanding who are the different stakeholders through that. So in that example of marketing says, it's not working for us, we're going to deprecate it. It's like, well, actually we can't, right? Because there's multiple different teams who play a part of this. Let's have a better understanding of where we're going, not only now, but in the future, and making sure we have the right people at the table to help make an educated decision on how we think about this partnership with vendors. And I think that's a big thing for me is whether we call them suppliers, vendors, at the end of the day, most organizations are only as good as the suppliers that they rely upon. And procurement is only as good as the supplier delivering. And the supplier is only good as the business and the information that they're getting. And so while we think about vendor-supplier relationships historically, in a lot of cases, especially with our larger SaaS players, it's actually partnerships and not in a traditional sales partnership engagement, but in really clear understanding with the transparency of what we're trying to do with tool X and making sure that the supplier is successful. Right, we want to be able to measure and manage them, but we also want to make sure that they're delivering to what we need to make sure that they're successful, because ultimately they're the ones that the business is relying on to get, in that marketing example, MQLs or whatever that is for the business. But we have to be able to have transparent conversations with them that are productive in delivering value back to the organization.
Yeah, that's really good. And especially that making sure that your supplier is successful as well, is because I really like that, because it's very holistic in terms of you, if you really do need that supplier, you definitely do need them to be successful. You need them to be able to stay in business for a long time because you rely upon their services. And, you know, a lot of the, and let's go back into the cloud cost as well, because a lot of that is also based on usage, which can get very tricky when it comes to negotiations. And from a finance standpoint, it can get very tricky to budget and forecast those types of expenses. What have you found that it works particularly well when you're working with usage-based cloud cost?
Yeah, that's a great question and a pretty loaded question.
I figured.
Yeah, it really, honestly, in a lot of cases, it goes back to historicals of understanding, okay, how we used it before, but that only tells you what you did, not where you're going. And I think that's really where I come back to that business engagement and understanding where that organization is going with their strategies to help drive a better view into a, whether it be a savings program or a usage-based model for future. And obviously in most cases, longer term agreements are better from a procurement standpoint, but that doesn't always align to what the business, where the business is going. And so understanding where the business is in their life cycle is really, really critical for our negotiations, but ultimately managing that spend, where if you have a new product, you can't forecast out 3 years. You don't know if it's going to be a viable product. And yes, the savings look great theoretically, but in reality, you have a commit that you're never going to hit. And so understanding what that growth pattern looks like for the business, and then coming back and to your question earlier, it's really partnering with finance of like, okay, how do we think this business is going to grow? And then making the best educated decision based on business input, finance alignment, to negotiate that deal for the organization.
You know, I ask this question every single guest that comes on the show, and this is, what's your number one tip for finance leaders when it comes to tackling the rising SaaS and cloud costs? And I'm definitely interested, what is your perspective going to be on this one?
Yeah, there's probably a couple things on this. It's obviously a big one. I think first and foremost is really, again, I come back to understand the business, understanding your full ecosystem, of SaaS spend, right? In the example of earlier, Kathy, you raised of like, there's multiple teams using multiple products. Okay, well, let's look at, and sometimes you can rationalize and sometimes you can't. Each tool is going to be different for their different use cases. I do come back to annual operating plans and understanding like, what does that growth look like? And what are those core capabilities? And being fairly ruthless with decision making on where we're going to invest, how we're going to invest, and then what is that growth plan look like for the future? Because again, ultimately, in a situation where you get into a savings plan with a commit amount, you need to actually know that you're going to meet that or come very, very close to hitting that commit amount. Versus, again, signing a deal looks great. X number of, millions in savings, but in reality, that savings aren't actual because you've never even come close to hitting that commit amount, right? So I think it is a multifaceted question. To me, it's understanding your entire stack. Like one, first and foremost, is having that partnership with engineering leaders, marketing leaders, et cetera. Understand what that stack actually looks like. What does that tool capability do, and how does it drive growth for the organization? Especially now as we look over the next and come back to the AI question is, a lot of these applications are either integrating AI into it, which is probably going to drive some cost differential in the future of that'd be cost increases in the future for them. What are our terms? How long does this deal for? Can we lock in a deal right now with as they start incubating these capabilities for the longer term now before we have price increases in the future? But it does come back down to, I would say, like tool rationalization and ultimately optimization.
I really like that tip of locking down that price until before they start increasing their prices because of the AI capabilities, because I can definitely see that on the horizon. And I have seen some of the tools starting to do that. So that's a great tip, Adam.
Yeah, no, and that's something we have seen is it's again, it's challenging because you don't know potentially where that usage or tool is going. It's not a freemium model, but it's definitely get in now in those cases, but it has to align to the business.
Exactly. Thank you so much for this conversation, Adam. It's been a pleasure to have you on the show.
Awesome. Kathy, thank you so much for the time. I appreciate it.